This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, your host, and our co-host on the program is Mr. Joe McKenzie. He is the founder of Ripple Connects. He turns candidates into contenders. His website is RippleConnects.com. That's RippleConnects with an S, RippleConnects.com, and 763-438-1621. We call that the POTS line jokingly around here. That's the plain old telephone system, 763-438-1621. Happy weekend, Joe McKenzie, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Freddie Bell. And in regards to that POTS line, I make sure I acknowledge everybody's voicemail and, you know, get a chance to understand where they're going in their career and see if we're a good fit in regards to our services.
All right. And I can attest to that. Joe does return every call. And there are some great resources, too, at RippleConnects.com that you can avail yourself to as well. This week, let's talk about the steps to move forward on a career path. And I know that there are many people whose careers are a winding journey. Some careers are a never-ending story, and there are some people whose careers are one where they never get off the starting block. But I know that there are some key things that we can discuss today that not only impacts the younger generation, but it impacts the seasoned generation as well. Today's workforce is experiencing right now a restart. I know there were only 266,000 jobs added last month, but in my opinion, there seems to be a lot of growth potential, Joe McKenzie.
And there is. And I think the key point is moving forward at any age. I've had, you know, literally my career knees taken out from underneath me in my 40s a couple times. And in my 30s were actually easier than my 40s. And my 50s have gotten easier than my... No career just goes straight up or goes a straight path where you want to go. It's a series of winding roads of setbacks, successes, as well as just learning experiences. I've learned so much from my mistakes and turned it around. But that sometimes those external forces, Freddie, knock you off your career path, right? You start to doubt if it was me, but maybe it was an external force. It was a recession. Maybe it was, you know, a new technology that changes. We see, you know, the change in brick and mortar, how we buy products. You know, often we're just along for the journey, and there's so many things that we need to keep moving forward on. And that's why I want to dedicate a segment today, because, Freddie, we have both had setbacks in our careers, right?
I've had a setback or two.
Yeah, you have obviously had success, right?
That's correct.
And we've learned a lot from our mistakes or our wins, right?
I would hope so. And I believe challenges in which we find our opportunities.
Yes, exactly. Those challenges test us, teaches us, stretches us to see where we can go with this, how our leadership, our emotional intelligence, our time and talent and energies, how they help overcome them. And so for all generations listening today, there's no straight line. There's no one way. It's a winding. It's ups and downs. It's around curves. And often we don't know around what's on the other side of that curve in our careers, do we?
No, we don't. And I think that's why we have to, as you say, maintain a focus on what's in our control.
Yes. And when we focus on what's in our control, we have some semblance of moving forward, correct?
That's right. That's right. Because if you're... You could just wander. Any road will get you there, as they say in Alice in Wonderland. But if you've got that focus, then you can really start to chart your path, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And you're the preeminent voice on focus. If you focus on what your long-term goal is, and often that is what's in your control, you will take steps to move forward. And we've talked about the small wins on the New Beginnings Career segment. A small win might be someone returning your call, right?
That's correct. That's correct.
And that person may have one piece of information that you can use to get another win or create some clarity on next steps, right?
That's right. So it's a series of wins, small wins that add up to the big victory.
Exactly. But if you can focus on those aspects, often you can overcome those setbacks, right? You get those small wins when you have setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
That's still moving forward, right? You're focusing on moving forward, getting those small wins, focusing on what's in control, what's in your control, I should say. That's a career. We start to think of a career as what we put on a resume after 40 years or what our LinkedIn profile looks at 40 years. In reality, you break it down, it's a series of setbacks, successes, lessons learned, right? You put it all together, there's your career.
That's right. That's right. So are there some steps that I know when people have some difficulties, even though it could be environmental, it could be the culture of the company, it's difficult to separate our personal feelings from saying that we don't measure up in some type of way. How do you get around the idea of not taking setbacks personally?
And it definitely is. And I've been there. I've been there through mergers, acquisitions, and just restructuring. How do you not take it personally? Try to be as objective as possible about why that company got to that point. And often it is external forces that are bearing down on that position that you're in. If you can think objectively about it, that does help take away some of the sting. But there's, believe me, I'm still stinging over a couple scenarios, because at the end of the day, it's people letting other people go. Thinking objectively helps, but pivoting quickly to what's in your control and getting those small wins, you know, how do you build upon some of those setbacks? You know, how can you take a positive that you've had and build upon that? Those are things that are in your control, and some of the steps may be as simple as, you know, learning more information about, you know, the field that you want to go into, reaching out to someone that's going to give you that clarity within your network, maybe just being more introspective of what you would have done differently, and then find that path or find that resource to do things differently. That's how I pivoted. There were times where I doubted myself, and I was able to find the right people, find the right unique network nodes to be a part of versus the one that I was in prior to that. It could be volunteer network node. It could be just mentoring network node. It could be a completely different area of the state that you can work in. Those are very often overlooked when you're facing setbacks and changes. And I think those are things we can certainly put in the category of under our control.
Everybody, we're talking with Joe McKenzie this weekend, and we're talking about steps to move forward on our individual career paths, and that there is a silver lining. Even behind every setback, there is an opportunity. And the experience is, you know, I think I tend to take the label off experiences. They're neither good nor bad. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not, because I believe there's a learning opportunity there somewhere that can help to propel mm-hmm. me forward. Is that the same mindset that we should take when we're trying to build our career along this winding journey that you mentioned earlier?
Absolutely. I think those experiences, we can take something from either a positive or a negative experience, take a label off, but that experience will make you stronger, will give you new insights about how you would handle it differently going forward. Absolutely, Freddie. Those experiences are going to help. You know, think about the people that we look at in politics or in sports and what they learn differently, and then they come back and get elected, or they fell short, you know, making a championship game, and they do something differently the next season, and they come back and win it. Those are all examples out in the world that we see. Well, that does happen in corporate America today, in the nonprofit sector today, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. It does happen where you pivot to the positive, or you make a change built upon those experiences, regardless if they're positive or negative, and make something out of it.
That's the key. That's the key. So what would you suggest as a remedy or a prescription to help to start to build on our career successes and really take stock of that?
We have career successes and we have setbacks. And often if we can parse them out to know what we did to be successful and what were some of the setbacks that we felt we could have done better or things that are out of our control, if you can separate the two and build upon those successes or learn from the experiences that were the setbacks, I think you can really make some headway just taking that mental step to think about them versus just pushing them behind you and just looking for something new. No, bring those experiences with you. They've toughened you. They've challenged you. They've made you better. Bring them along with you. And sometimes in an interview situation, if an employer knows what you've learned from your experience and now what you're going to do different, what an insightful way for that employer to see how you think, how you pivot, how you do things different, because you will have setbacks at that new company. And you just gave them an insight of how you overcame some of the things that you were up against.
And that
I think that is just a positive way forward, because believe me, next week I'm going to have a setback. I'm going to learn how to overcome it. And then I'm going to use that so I don't have that same setback.
That's Joe McKenzie on New Beginnings, and you do some fine work at Ripple Connects.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
Stay with us. Our show continues right now.
If you've received the vaccine, there is some good news.
You can get together indoors with other fully vaccinated people, unvaccinated healthy people, without wearing a mask. This would be like a grandparent traveling to visit their children and grandchildren who all live together in the same household. But if you're visiting a household where there will be immunocompromised people there who are at increased risk of getting really sick if they catch the coronavirus, you should still wear a mask.
This message from the Minnesota Department of Health.
It's time to wake up and finally go after that goal and create that success that you've been wanting for so long. West Metro Hypnosis is making it so easy to find out how powerful hypnosis can be to help you make positive changes in your life. For only $49, you can schedule your discovery session to discover how powerful you really are and how hypnosis can help you reach your goals. So what limitation have you accepted about yourself? That you can't lose weight, that you can't stop smoking, that you can't get over a fear, that you can't. $49 will show you how possible your goal really is. Call Kelly today at 952-222-3975 to schedule your $49 discovery session. You'll be surprised at how good it feels to finally be creating your success. 952-222-3975. West Metro Hypnosis, wake up to your success.
This is the Real Possibilities Update, your guide to all the exciting things that are happening with AARP in the Twin Cities. Because if you don't think Real Possibilities in the Twin Cities when you think AARP, well, then you don't know ARP. You see, AARP is hosting free Movies for Grown-Ups screenings at theaters across the metro. They're helping protect families from identity theft and scams with the AARP Fraud Watch Network. And AARP volunteers are helping people in need complete their tax returns free of charge. So whether you're a caregiver, someone who's trying to save for retirement, or if you just want to save money and connect with friends and neighbors for fun at local events, then AARP has resources for you. Get to know AARP and see all the real possibilities right here in the Twin Cities at aarp.org/twincities.
Visit my all-new FreddieBell.com website. Get up close and personal with me as a speaker, motivator, and broadcaster. Read what others have to say when they've hired me as a keynote speaker and presenter. And learn why I'm the authority on the power of focus. Download the marketing kit or contact me directly at 888-639-9738. When you're there, stop by my all-new Freddie Bell Show webpage at FreddieBell.com. FreddieBell.com. Information, motivation, innovation, and more.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Good morning again, everyone, and welcome back to New Beginnings. And with us right now has been our position to talk with a really wonderful individual who is the Vaccine Outreach Director for the COVID-19 Vaccine Equity and Engagement Program, Elizabeth Ebot. Good morning and welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Freddie. Good morning.
Glad you're with us. There is new guidance coming from the CDC adopted by the state of Minnesota involving some of the young minds in our community. Can you talk about the new guidance from Pfizer?
That's right. This week we reached another vaccine milestone. On Monday, the FDA authorized use of the Pfizer vaccine for 12 to 15-year-olds in the U.S., and it's really a crucial step forward, you think, in the recovery from this pandemic. And I think a relief for a lot of young people and families who feel one step closer to now enjoying all the things that they've missed out on in the last year. So the final federal guidance is expected to be issued from the CDC later this week. The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices will be meeting. That's when they'll be able to announce sort of final recommendations to providers on actually administering the vaccine to this age group. So at that time, Minnesota as well will step up, provide that guidance to providers, and we expect parents and guardians to begin having options to make vaccination appointments later this week. Well, when it comes to I think it's important for people to hear about how successful this trial was for our 12 to 15 year olds. The researchers enrolled just over 2,200 participants aged 12 to 15, gave them either the two doses of the vaccine or a placebo 3 weeks apart. None of the young people who received the actual vaccine had symptomatic coronavirus infection. So it was really a huge success as far as this trial goes.
Wow. So how important is this development to the overall herd immunity? That term has been resurfacing here as of late. How important is it to the overall herd immunity for not only the state of Minnesota, but for our country?
I mean, it's crucial for us to move forward towards that herd immunity, to have this group. And of course, we're looking with some of the clinical trials are now looking at even younger age groups, all the way from 6 months up. And I think we know that for young people, they have not gotten as sick as other age groups, but it's not that they were completely immune to the disease. Mm-hmm. And we also know that for young people, they often carry the disease as well. And so when it comes to not only protecting themselves, protecting their parents, protecting their teachers, protecting their neighbors, their grandparents, it's critically important for us to be able to vaccinate this age group so that we can collectively move towards that herd immunity we so desperately want.
If we were to go back in history and look at just about vaccines in general, I'm thinking about mumps, rubella, measles, polio, and so forth. Does history tell us that there was a similar type of hesitancy among parents with these types of vaccinations? And we were focusing on children at that time, but does history tell us that we've gone through this before?
We're certainly hearing some of the same concerns that parents have had, caregivers have had with other vaccines. We're certainly relying on those trusted sources to be able to provide factual information, to empower parents, empower their children to make this decision for themselves. And certainly, you know, turning to your pediatrician, your healthcare provider, all of those entities that you usually go to get that sort of guidance, they'll be doing the same with this vaccine. And again, sharing the information about how successful this has been in this age group, sharing about the side effects being, you know, similar certainly to adults, but not anything that would raise, you know, a level of concern, too much concern, but sort of empowering parents and caregivers to say, yes, I think this is a good decision for my child and for our community.
Everyone, we're talking with Elizabeth Ebalt. She is the Vaccine Outreach Director for the state of Minnesota. So the governor has set some guidance and goals, I'll call it, to be on track to have open up the state by July 1st, or if we reach 70% immunization throughout the state of Minnesota. How are we tracking toward the initial goal of 70%, or is July 1st more realistic?
That's a good question, and you're right. So it is this three-step process with either the 70% of Minnesotans age 16 years older vaccinated, or by the time we reach July 1st. Currently, we have more than 2.6 million Minnesotans who've gotten their first shot. So we're really on track to reach that 70% vaccination rate by the end of June, which then, you know, we would sort of align with both of those. So it'll be the end of June likely, which obviously then is close to July 1st. And, you know, we've seen in our most vulnerable population, so I'm talking about our seniors, our people in long-term care facilities and assisted living residents, our educators, frontline workers, you know, they really stepped up and got the vaccine. If we look at our 65 plus population specifically, 90% of them are now vaccinated. So we feel like we've set these realistic goals that every step of the way we really have been able to achieve. If we're looking at what this three-step process will look like, step one began last Friday, and that was some initial relaxation of restrictions, primarily for outdoor settings. Step two will start May 28th, and that will end remaining capacity and distance limits for indoor events and gatherings, as well as some other face covering restrictions as well will end. Step three then, our last big one, will take place once we've reached that 70% of Minnesotans age 16 years and older vaccinated. And that, we can guess, are about a little over 3 million people. And again, that will then align most likely with that end of June, beginning of July deadline.
So were these numbers forecasted some time ago? We're thinking you started out with 65 plus. And I'm thinking that must have been the bulk of Minnesotans who you were trying to vaccinate. Did you anticipate that there would be this slowdown that we're seeing not only here in Minnesota, but across the country with now we're calling it vaccine hesitancy? But was this forecasted?
That was forecasted. And it's really been our goal from the get-go, as the governor made clear, was really to target our most vulnerable. Those groups I mentioned are seniors, people in long-term care facilities, frontline workers, educators. So there was this strong effort to engage those groups, get them connected to the vaccine. We knew, and then within those groups as well, focusing on our BIPOC populations, our persons with disabilities, our various indigenous groups as well, falling into our BIPOC. And when we reached those thresholds, or when we incorporated that into our initial planning, we knew that there would be a time when supply may outpace demand, which is what we're seeing now. So we're really employing some additional unique efforts to try and empower individuals who may be more hesitant, certainly, to make this decision for themselves that, you know, the vaccine is a good choice for myself, for my community.
Really interesting, everyone. Elizabeth Ebalt with us this morning. And I'm just curious, not to talk politics, but it's interesting that the BIPOC community and organizations who are trying to help vaccinate the diverse communities has come under fire from the Republican Party about the amount of money that the state is putting into these organizations in order to increase the numbers. Is it displaced money? Are we still people of color, the BIPOC community, still disproportionately impacted by this COVID-19?
That has been a fact from the get-go. We know that we've seen the effects of COVID-19 affect disproportionately our BIPOC communities, especially the most. And it has been looking at the systemic disparities that we've seen in communities of color and indigenous communities. We believe and still stand by the fact that that needed to be foundational to our vaccination approach. And we then decided to partner with community organizations, with diverse media partners, to make sure that the messages that are being communicated to our populations that fall into these categories are the kinds of messages that they can trust, feel comfortable with, and then again, make that personal, very personal decision to get a vaccine. So I think that, you know, as far as any misguided efforts, we certainly stand by the fact that this has been a critical component of our public health strategy, and feel fantastic to be having partners like KMOJ who can help us get the word out.
All right. Elizabeth Ebalt, I can't thank you enough for being with us, talking about the new milestones reached and goals yet to be attained in this whole fight against COVID-19. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thanks, Freddie, as always.
If you've received the vaccine, there is some good news.
You can get together indoors with other fully vaccinated people, unvaccinated, healthy people, without wearing a mask. This would be like a grandparent traveling to visit their children and grandchildren who all live together in the same household. But if you're visiting a household where there will be immunocompromised people there who are at increased risk of getting really sick if they catch the coronavirus, you should still wear a mask.
This message from the Minnesota Department of Health.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi again, everyone, and welcome back to New Beginnings. And joining us now is Maren Lavad. She is the aging advocate for the Rainbow Health Organization. Rainbow Health is doing a lot of work in the LGBT community, especially with aging needs, and there's a special assessment that is going on. And I'm wondering, Maren, how important is this aging assessment and why now?
Wow, great question. It is so important. This is actually the third assessment that's been done. We do one every 10 years, but a lot has changed in the last 10 years. And one of the biggest things to note is that the LGBT community that is aging now is called the Stonewall Generation. And they're really the first LGBTQ community that has aged out. So they've aged as their authentic self, either for 5 years or for their whole lives. And so they're approaching this aging industry and wondering, can I continue to live as my authentic self, or do I need to recloset myself in order to receive the healthcare services I need?
Oh, my goodness. And so doing this 10 years ago, what were some of the interesting things that may have been uncovered by this survey that you are addressing yourselves to right now in 2021?
Yeah, well, one interesting thing is that LGBTQ folks are twice as likely to be caregivers to a partner, friend, or family as their non-LGBTQ peers. And so they certainly have had experience being caregivers themselves, but they really are concerned about things like isolation. They're really concerned about not having a safety net, because in this country, we really rely on unpaid caregivers to do the bulk of the work. Mm-hmm. And so people who might not still be in contact with their biological family, people who might have lost a partner, they're really concerned about having that safety net.
Everyone, we're talking with Maren Lavad. She is the aging advocate for Rainbow Health, and we're talking about the aging needs assessment. So as we go through, how many LGBTQ seniors would you estimate right now are living in Minnesota, according to the survey?
We're aiming to get about 500 folks to fill out the survey, but we currently have about 48,000 LGBTQ seniors living in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. So now that you've got this information, what changes do you think might be in place just based on what you did 20 years ago? Well, I'm sorry, 10 years ago, and that could really help in the future, especially in the area of healthcare?
Yeah, I think one of the major things is education of our aging professionals. So making sure that people understand how to be inclusive and welcoming, what language to be using when we're working with LGBTQ or HIV, people living with HIV. That's the first step, is that training for our professionals.
Do you think that there's still some concern about healthcare even today?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we know that health equity is a huge issue in the state. And when you think about the LGBT community, we're talking not just about a isolated community, people of all walks of life, of different economic, geographic, cultural, racial backgrounds fit in this community. So there's a lot of intersectionality. What does it mean if you are an African-American, college-educated lesbian aging? Versus what does it mean if you're a trans man who is currently looking for housing, who just transitioned 5 years ago and has been unemployed for 10 years? There's so many different elements in this health equity conversation, and this is just one that we have to keep talking about.
If our audience would like more information about Rainbow Health or this survey, how can they reach out, Maren?
Our website, www.rainbowhealth.org, and on there you'll find a link to the needs assessment. And we really hope everyone across the state who's 50 and above and identifies within this community will take it.
As we say goodbye, what would be one thought that you'd like to leave with our New Beginnings listeners?
Simply that the more we can think about how we take care of the most forgotten in our community as they age, will benefit us all as we age.
Maureen Lavad, aging advocate for the Rainbow Health Organization, and this is New Beginnings.
This is the Real Possibilities Update, your guide to all the exciting things that are happening with AARP in the Twin Cities. Because if you don't think real possibilities in the Twin Cities when you think AARP, well, then you don't know ARP. You see, AARP is hosting free Movies for Grown-Ups screenings at theaters across the metro. They're helping protect families from identity theft and scams with the AARP Fraud Watch Network. And AARP volunteers are helping people in need complete their tax returns free of charge. So whether you're a caregiver, someone who's trying to save for retirement, or if you just want to save money and connect with friends and neighbors for fun at local events, then AARP has resources for you. Get to know AARP and see all the real possibilities right here in the Twin Cities at aarp.org/twincities.
If you've received the vaccine, there is some good news.
For fully vaccinated people, if you've been around someone who's had coronavirus, you don't need to stay away from others anymore or get tested unless you develop symptoms. But if you live in a group setting or around someone who has coronavirus, and by group settings, we mean a group home, congregate care facilities, you know, someone who's in a correctional institution, you should still stay away from others for 14 days and get tested, even if you don't have any symptoms.
This message from the Minnesota Department of Health.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell. Let's talk about key birthdays. Yes, we're talking about birthdays on New Beginnings this weekend. You hit a lot of milestone birthdays when you're young. At 13, you're a teenager. At 18, you can vote. And at 21, you can get into bars. You hit a bunch of milestones later in life as well, and many of them have to do with retirement. Knowing these age milestones can help you to better prepare for life after work. They include the following. Number one, turning 50. It's catch-up time. People 50 and older can contribute $6,500 more to their 401ks or 403bs each year for a total contribution of up to $26,000 this year. Those 50 and older who contribute to IRAs and Roth IRAs can throw in an additional $1,000 for a total maximum annual contribution of $7,000. This according to NerdWallet. Also, the age 55. Normally, people have to pay a 10% federal penalty along with income taxes when they withdraw money from retirement accounts before age 59 and a half. The penalty, but not taxes, disappears on 401k and 403b withdrawals if you are age 55 or older when you quit, get fired, or retire. The next age is 59 and a half. At this age, you can take withdrawals from workplace plans or IRAs without penalty. Also, some 401k plans allow workers who are at least 59 and a half to do an in-service rollover, allowing them to move money into an IRA while still working and contributing to the 401k. At age 60, for most widows and widowers, age 60 is the earliest they can begin to draw Social Security survivor benefits. Age 62 is next. This is the earliest you can begin Social Security retirement or spousal benefits, but your checks will be reduced if you start before your full retirement age, which ranges from 66 to 67. At age 65, most Americans are eligible for Medicare. Typically, you will want to sign up in the 7 months around your birthday, meaning the 3 months before the month you turn 65, the month you turn 65, and the 3 months afterwards. Delaying after that point can increase your premiums. Ages 66 to 67. That's the full retirement age, and the full retirement age is 66 for people born between 1943 and 1954. The age rises 2 months for each birth year after that until it reaches 67 for people born in 1960 and later. Waiting at least until full retirement age to start Social Security benefits means you won't have to settle for reduced checks. Age 70, as a juicy benefit awaits those who can delay the start of Social Security, their benefits increase by 8% annually until it maxes out at age 70. And age 72, you are required at that age to start taking at least a minimum amount from most retirement plans beginning at age 72. Two exceptions, though. If you continue to work,
You can wait until you retire to start minimum distributions from your 401k or 403b. Minimum distributions are still required from traditional IRAs. However, if you have a Roth IRA, for example, you won't be required to start distributions at any age. All of this information comes from the Nerd Wallet. If you'd like more information, nerdwallet.com. You're listening to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and we've got more information coming up right now.
Here's your host, Freddie Bell,
as he welcomes career expert Joe McKenzie, founder of Ripple Connects.
Joe McKenzie, how can we avoid the myopic career search?
We can avoid the myopic job search by looking at your career, looking back, look at your marketable skills and your pattern of achievement, and bring those forward to see what's marketable today. And that will help you avoid the unimaginative, narrow-minded, short-sighted approach to a job search. Bring those attributes, those accomplishments forward, and I'm confident that you're going to find new opportunities out there that you may have never thought of.
For more information, how can we reach Joe McKenzie of Ripple Connects?
You can contact me directly at 763-438-1621. 763-438-1621. Your network plus my techniques equals more success for you.
You would do anything to protect the ones you love. Help make sure your child is protected from dangerous diseases by getting them vaccinated. Talk to your doctor or clinic today about the vaccines your child needs and the safety measures they have in place to protect your family during COVID-19. Go to health.mn.us/immunize for more. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
As we continue talking about your money on New Beginnings this weekend, there are some things that you should really consider to make painless your insurance claims. Maybe it's a loud crash overhead. Maybe it's shattering glass. For a homeowner, these sounds can mean that you're about to get acquainted with the insurance claims process. I've got 6 tips to help you make the process of filing a home insurance claim a little easier. This information is a service of Nerd Wallet this weekend. Report the damage immediately, meaning reporting a damage right away can put money in your pocket faster. Your insurer will assign a claim number and send an adjuster to assess the damage. Shortly after that, the insurance company will issue an initial payment minus your deductible to cover the estimated cost of repairs. Although sometimes you may need to wait to report a claim, for example, if you were traveling when the damage occurred, doing so can bring additional scrutiny from the insurer. Number 2, document the damage. Taking photos and creating an inventory of damaged items gives you and your insurance company a record of everything that needs to be repaired or replaced. Number 3, make temporary repairs. If you have a hole in your roof, you don't want to live with it until the adjuster arrives. Once you have documented the damage for your insurance company, you can make temporary repairs if it's safe to do so. As long as you keep receipts and can document why the repairs were needed, you can submit the expenses to your insurer as a part of that claim. Number 4, communicate with your adjuster. Your insurance company will appoint an adjuster to handle the claim, and that person will be your primary point of contact throughout the process. You'll need to be your own biggest advocate, however, remembering that the adjuster represents the insurance company's interest, not yours. You also can hire a public insurance adjuster to manage the claim on your behalf with the insurer. In exchange for their expertise, you will typically pay a public adjuster a percentage of the final claim amount. Number 5, save your receipts. You could spend a lot of money on temporary repairs before receiving a payment from your insurance company. If you do get a check from the insurance company up front, you will still need to save all the receipts. Estimates just won't cut it. And then number 6, consider your contractor. If your home is damaged, you don't have to use the insurance company's recommended contractor to do the repairs. The United Policyholders Advocacy Group says insurers tend to bring in companies they frequently partner with, but during the claims process, you could still find a licensed, bonded, and insured contractor on your own if you have concerns about the cost estimates, for example. So those six things that you need to consider: report the damage immediately. Number two, document the damage. Number three, make temporary repairs. Number four, communicate with your adjuster. That adjuster works for the insurance company, not you. Number five, save your receipts. And number six, consider your contractor. You're listening to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and our program continues right now.
Minnesota is home to a robust network of more than 300 food shelves that may be able to offer additional food support to families and individuals who are suffering from hunger. Hunger Solutions can locate a food shelf near you. Call the Minnesota Food Helpline at 1-888-711-1151, 888-711-1151, or use the interactive map at hungersolutions.org. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
As we continue with New Beginnings, we now turn to Unity South in the Twin Cities, where the Reverend James Stacy is the senior minister. More information is found at unitysouth.org. Here now is the Reverend James Stacy with a lesson already in progress.
Education alone will not do it. Sandra said she remembered an old expression that sort of speaks to this. A person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. People cannot be forced to change through a group discussion, through teamwork. They have to be willing to let go the distinctions that they've applied. Well, I learned from another case. This happened around the time of the events in Charlottesville. And I heard this individual lecture 2 years ago at the Chautauqua Institution in New York State. Risa Goluboff is the first woman ever to be dean of the great school of law at the University of Virginia, Charlottesville. And she said she learned something. Very often these days we hear, well, let's all sit down at the table and have a conversation. Let's learn about one another. Open our understanding. Open our hearts. And she said, dear friend, I had a realization after the events in Charlottesville. She said, I was in such a community discussion, and people challenged and said, excuse me, you are a Jew. I do not want you here. Get out. But she said it was a lesson for her because she realized how important is that first step of willingness. Willingness to see things differently, to feel things differently. A willingness to step out of our self-conceived barriers of who we are, and perhaps more importantly, who others are. And she said it's hard to have this mind-opening conversation with others when people don't want to talk to you, don't think you have a right to be at the table. And of course, her experience was as a Jewish woman, but it's not limited to that. There are many ways that people do not feel welcome at a community table. So this willingness is a critical point. And in my opinion, willingness is what we learn in our spiritual practice. It's what I hope unity teaches in its own way, in its own tradition. But it's that willingness step that comes before anything can be accomplished at the level of education or learning about others, learning about distinctions. First, we have to be willing. Willing to be present to others. Willing to welcome others into our presence. Willing to work with others. So the four steps that I'd like to center this lesson around are, one, that willingness component. Two, to recognize the power of group experience. Like when we come together in our times of prayer, when we work with silent unity, our spiritual practice that recognizes we are greater together than we are in isolation. That we never walk alone. That we can discover a unity, a spiritual reality that is within our entire group. Third point, that from that group experience, we can return to our individual daily practice and say, as we often do, what is mine to do? What step can I take to further this intention or vision that I've realized in the willing group experience? And then, fourth step, then we are ready for teamwork, group intention, social action, work for the good of our common welfare. But there was a lot of preparatory work before we get to that social action. I want to close with the beautiful poetic form that Rumi gives to this idea of going beyond boundaries. Hear these words. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. That famous quotation goes further. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. Do you hear that idea of unity, of becoming one? Let's hear it again. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full, too unlimited to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. So let's take a journey in a time of prayer. If we allow ourselves in prayer to shift our attention, our journey might only take a minute. It doesn't have to be lengthy to be powerful. So I invite you to join me in a unity in the silence of prayer, if you are willing. Gently close your eyes to turn your attention not within yourself in isolation, but to turn your attention into the spiritual reality behind all things, yourself, others, all creation. I invite you to hold this first step if you are willing. If you are not, then simply take this time to daydream or hold whatever thoughts you choose. But if you are willing, hold this thought with me. I am willing to go beyond my ego self. I am willing.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org.
Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com.
If you're ready to reinvent, recalibrate, or retool your career, Ripple Connects can help. Visit RippleConnects.com. We work one-on-one with our clients in a safe, collaborative fashion designed to significantly improve the likelihood of landing the ideal engagement. Take control of your job search and create your ideal future. Engage with Ripple Connects, where we turn candidates into contenders. Go to RippleConnects.com.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making us a part of your weekend on New Beginnings. This is Freddie Bell reminding you that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.